Good morning. This is January 15th, 2023, and today's talk is going to be a little different. I want to pull you into the consciousness that's developing here, a consciousness that sees that time is an illusion and that we live in an eternal now. Now this will relate to our study of the healing seminars by Herb Fitch. And I counted, I have nine different things I want to quote. So this may end up being two talks to cover this one topic. I want to start with a quote which I found online about John Archibald Wheeler. He was a physicist. And I don't think I ever told you, but my first teacher, Don, was also a physicist, and he also worked on the Manhattan Project. Okay, so let's just jump into this little story here about Mr. Wheeler. He's a physicist, and he's trying to unravel things that nobody had ever looked at before. It was late summer, 1944, and Joe, which is Mr. Wheeler's brother, was fighting on the front lines of World War II in Italy. Wheeler had sat down with the Danish scientist Niels Bohr and worked out the physics of nuclear fission, showing that unstable isotopes of elements like uranium and plutonium would, when bombarded with neutrons, split down the seams, releasing unimaginable stores of atomic energy, enough to flatten a city, enough to end a war. So when he got this postcard, the postcard said simply, "Hurry up." And that was his brother, Joe. After the postcard's arrival, Wheeler worked as quickly as he could, and the Manhattan Project completed its construction of the atomic bomb the following summer. Over the Jornada del Muerto desert in New Mexico, physicists detonated the first nuclear explosion in human history, turning 1,000 feet of desert sand into glass. Mr. Oppenheimer, the project's director, watched from the safety of a base camp 10 miles away and silently quoted Hindu scripture from the Bhagavad Gita, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." In Hanford, Wheeler was thinking something different. "I hope I'm not too late." He didn't know that on a hillside near Florence, lying in a foxhole, Joe was already dead. When Wheeler learned the news, he was devastated. He blamed himself. He said in his journal, "One cannot escape the conclusion that an atomic bomb program started a year earlier and concluded a year sooner would have spared 15 million lives, my brother Joe's among them." He wrote in his memoir, "I could probably have influenced the decision makers if I had tried." Time. As a physicist, Wheeler had always been curious to untangle the nature of that mysterious dimension. But now, in the wake of Joe's death, it was personal. So, what did he do next? Wheeler changed our understanding of time more radically than any thinker before him or since. Now, the person that wrote this was not aware of Herb Fitch. A change driven by the memory of his brother. In 1905, 6 years before Wheeler was born, Einstein formulated his theory of special relativity. He discovered that time does not flow at a steady pace everywhere for everyone. Instead, it's relative to the motion of an observer. The faster you go, the slower time goes. If you could go as fast as light, you'd see time come to a halt and disappear. And of course, we all know his theory that if you traveled at the speed of light and went to Alpha Centauri and came back, you would be about 6 months older if the trip took 6 months, and everybody on Earth would be, well, your friends in their 20s and 30s would be in their 70s and 80s. You'd still be in your 20s or 30s. In the years following Einstein's discovery, the formulation of quantum mechanics led physicists to the opposite conclusion. And that's where things stood, the two theories in a stalemate. The nature of time up in the air when Wheeler first came onto the physics scene in 1930s. Wheeler's first inkling that time wasn't quite what it seemed came one night in the spring of 1940 at Princeton. He was thinking about positrons. Positrons are the antiparticle alter egos of electrons. They have the same mass, same spin, but an opposite charge. But why should such alter egos exist at all? When the idea struck, Wheeler called his student and announced they're all the same particle. Imagine, there's only one lone electron in the whole universe, Wheeler said, winding its way through space and time, tracing paths so convoluted that this single particle takes on the illusion of countless particles, including positrons. A positron, Wheeler declared, is just an electron moving backwards in time. Now this sounds so much like Mr. Herb Fitch, I can't even believe it. That's why I got so excited and stayed up researching this. So after working on the Manhattan Project in the 40s, Wheeler was eager to get back to Princeton. And on November 1st, 1952, Wheeler was on board the SS Curtis, 35 miles from the island of Elugelab in the Pacific. He watched the U.S. detonate an H-bomb, 700 times the energy of the atom bomb that destroyed Hiroshima. When the test was over, so was the island. Wheeler fell in love with general relativity and gravitation. Back at Princeton, just down the street from Einstein's home, he stood at a chalkboard and gave the first course ever on the subject. As he pushed the theory to its limits, he became fascinated by an object that seemed to turn time on its head. It was called an Einstein-Rosen bridge, and it was a kind of tunnel that carves out a cosmic shortcut, connecting distant points in space-time, so that by entering one end and emerging from the other, one could travel faster than light, or backward in time. Wheeler, who loved language, called these tunnels a wormhole. Now, if you've watched any Star Trek movies or Star Trek shows on TV, or maybe Star Wars, you are aware of wormholes. You enter one here and you come out at Alpha Centauri. And by the way, Alpha Centauri is 26.22 trillion miles away from Earth. And a wormhole would bend time and space so that traveling 26.22 trillion miles would take only a minute or two. And according to quantum physics, may bring you backwards in time. As he pushed further through space-time, he came upon another gravitational anomaly, a place where mass is so densely packed that gravity grows infinitely strong and space-time infinitely mangled. This, too, he gave a name, a black hole. It was a place where time lost all meaning if it ever existed. Every black hole brings an end to time, Wheeler wrote. That's fascinating, isn't it? Because there are black holes. Scientists can see them. I think the Hubble can see them. In the 1960s, as the Vietnam War tore the fabric of American culture, Wheeler struggled to mend a rift in physics. All right, so I'm just going to put this in everyday language. And I don't know if you are aware of it, but I bought a book on quantum physics several years ago because I was fascinated about it then. And it was Wheeler that invented the way to observe positrons. Now let's see if we can get down here where he did it. Okay, in the experiment, single photons are shot from a laser at a screen with two tiny parallel slits, and then they land on a photographic plate on the other side where they leave a dot of light. Each photon has a 50-50 chance of passing through either slit. So after many rounds of this, you'd expect to see two big blobs of light on the other plate, on the plate. One showing the pile of photons that pass through slit A, and one showing a pile that passed through slit B. But you don't. Instead, you see a series of black and white stripes, an interference pattern. Watching this actual experiment in progress makes vivid the quantum behavior, Wheeler wrote. Simple though it is in concept, it strikingly brings out the mind-bending strangeness of quantum theory. As impossible as it sounds, the interference pattern can only mean one thing. Each photon went through both slits simultaneously, but as the photon heads toward the screen, it's described by a quantum wave function. At the screen, the wave function splits in two. The two versions of the same photon travel through each slit, and when they emerge on the other side, their wave functions recombine, only now they are partially out of phase. Where the waves align, the light is amplified, producing bright light on the plate. Where they are out of sync, the light cancels itself out, leaving stripes of darkness. Things get stranger, however, when you try to catch the photons passing through the slits. Place a detector at each slit and run the experiment again, photon after photon, dot by dot. A pattern begins to emerge. It's not the stripes. There are two big blobs on the plate, one opposite each slit. Each photon took only one path at a time, as if it knows it's being observed. So, he wanted to know if he could scale that up. Could our asking about the origin of existence, which is observing, about the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago, could that create the universe? You see what he's stumbling upon, don't you? He's unaware of it, but he is stumbling upon it. And that is the second chapter of Genesis. And briefly, he sees the first chapter of Genesis, too. I'll show you. In his journal, Wheeler drew a picture of a capital U for universe, with a giant eye perched atop the left-hand peak, staring across the letters abyss to the tip of the right-hand side, the origin of time. As you follow the swoop of the U from right to left, time marches forward and the universe grows. Stars form and die, spewing their carbon ashes into the emptiness of space. In a corner of the sky, some carbon lands on a rocky planet, merges into some primordial goo, and grows and evolves until you have an observer, the eye. The universe has created an observer, and now, in an act of quantum measurement, the observer looks back and creates the universe. The universe has a self-creating system. The problem with the picture Wheeler knew was that it conflicted with our most basic understanding of time. It was one thing for electrons to zip backward through time or for wormholes to skirt time's arrow. It was something else entirely to talk about creation. The past flows to the present, and then the present turns around and causes the past? In 1979, Wheeler gave a lecture at the University of Maryland in which he proposed a bold new experiment, one that would become the most dramatic application of his ideas about time, called the delayed choice. Wheeler realized that it would be possible to arrange the usual double slit experiment in such a way that the observer can decide whether he wants to see stripes or blobs. That is, he can create a bit of reality after the photon has already passed through the screen. At the last possible second, he can choose to remove the photographic plate, revealing two small telescopes, one pointed at the left and the other at the right. The telescopes can tell which slit the photon has passed through. But if the observer leaves the plate in place, the interference pattern forms. The observer's delayed choice determines whether the photon has taken one path or two after it has already done one or the other. For Wheeler, this wasn't a mere curiosity. This was a clue to the universe's existence. One that was born in a Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago to be created right now by us. Wheeler said, just take the delayed choice experiment and scale it up. Imagine light traveling toward Earth from a quasar a billion light years away. A massive galaxy sits between the quasar and the Earth, diverting the light's path, with its gravitational field like a lens. The light bends around the galaxy, skirting either left or right with equal probability, and for the sake of the experiment, arrives on Earth a single photon at a time. We are faced with a choice. We can center a photographic plate at the light's arrival spot, where an interference pattern will gradually emerge. Or we can point our telescope to the left or right to see which path the light took. Our choice determines which of two mutually exclusive histories the photon lived. We determine its route. Right now, despite the fact that it began its journey a billion years ago. All right, so you see what he was doing? Now, this was in 1979. He was discovering that time is an illusion. And I wanted to get to that last part where they talked about the eternal now. Let's see if I can find it. Still, some fundamental insight eluded Wheeler. He knew quantum measurement allowed observers to, in the present, to create the past, the universe hoisting itself by its own bootstraps. Well, essentially what he said, Mr. Wheeler, was that the universe, there's no place to put time in the universe, because according to quantum mechanics, the universe exists in the eternal now, and the only thing time is what Mr. Einstein said, "It's a stubbornly persistent illusion." Now, these were things that Wheeler was looking at in 1979. In 1979, there was also a man named Herb Fitch, and he was looking at some of the same things. And I was at the seminar where he said, "Joel never had a patient. And he never considered himself a practitioner, but rather the expression of the Christ on earth. And everyone said, 'What a marvelous healer.' He never touched a patient with his hands, mostly because many of his patients were thousands of miles away. They were absent healings in many cases, just a voice on the phone or a letter in the mail. Nobody to touch, no person to reach that far, no mental healing, no casting of thought in that direction. But the principle you learned in the past few days, that everywhere is here, and that simultaneity is the law of the divine invisible, and that therefore this which appears in time, which requires healing, is a sequence." A person was good, and now a person is ill, and now a person's getting better or worse. This isn't simultaneity. This is sequence, and sequence is in time, and God's Spirit does not function in time. And so spiritual healing must now apply the rule that all healing is done outside time. That's our method. You have learned about living outside time, and now we want to see how this will affect your healing and the light of healing that you project." All right, so he says, "Abide outside time and permit the light of spirit to do all the work. Let Christ do all the healing." And Mr. Wheeler, on another part of the in another part of the United States at the same time, the same year, was discovering that you can look back billions of years ago and change the present. He was discovering that time is an illusion. You can bend it with a wormhole. You can make it disappear completely with a black hole. He was discovering that Einstein was right. There's nowhere to put time because this universe, after the Big Bang, the universe, he could measure. It was in the eternal now. And the only reason time passed is because, well, he agreed with Einstein that it's a stubbornly persistent illusion. And they proved it on paper. They proved it with their calculations. They proved it with their quantum physics. Now, he says, "If your consciousness is not fully developed to the point where God is the riveting post of your consciousness, then you're just going to find you're just in the quiet with your eyes closed." Okay, so he's trying to teach us how to step out of time. Now we're introducing another principle to add to your work, which can increase your degree of effectiveness. And that is that time is not passing. Everything that happens that you've got to heal is happening in time that is not passing. Unless you can walk across that invisible line which says, "Well, I'm still going to try to heal it," you're going to do you're going to go right into time. So you've got to see if it's in time that isn't passing, it isn't happening. Even if the patient is quite concerned about it and thinks it's happening. Okay, so in the realm of physicists, and my first teacher, Don, was one that worked on this Manhattan Project. And afterwards, he told me one time, they were divided. Half of the physicists thought that when they split the atoms, that it would have a chain reaction and every atom in the universe would explode. All of them, everywhere. And the other half thought that there would be a limit. I said, which one were you? He said, I thought there would be a chain reaction where all of the universe would be destroyed. And yet I said, you guys, you set it off anyway, not knowing. He said, yeah, and he said, I still can prove on paper where it should have a chain reaction. I said, well, how come it didn't? He said, God. Just a little aside. So anyway, this excites me because I'm in the middle of this. I mean, I'm meeting with Don, who worked in the Manhattan Project. He's my first teacher. Later, I learn about Joel, and then I come to meet Herb, and Herb's teaching the same thing. So I'm in the scientific community and quantum physicists, quantum mechanics. They know that you can bend time, and if you travel at the speed of light, you can stop time. That's mathematically. They can prove it with equations. And here you have Herb saying, that you have to step outside of time in order to heal. And it happened to me. It happened to me when I was at this seminar. Now he says, time itself is not external. Time is in your mind. They had a hard time, the quantum physicists, trying to figure out where to put time, because once they saw the original creation, that would be Genesis 1, they saw a perfect spiritual creation. But it stood still because there was no time. Where could they put time? And the more they played with it, the more they discovered nowhere. There's nowhere to put time. Time does not exist. And if you go fast enough, you can live in the eternal now. Now that's scientifically, but we know you don't have to go fast enough. We know you have to sit completely still. And so Wheeler is talking about no time, and over here, Herb Fitch is talking about no time. Everything in time is therefore in your mind. When you locate the person, the place, the thing, or condition in your mind, your work is never outside. Your work is in your own level of consciousness. All right, so you can see that both of these gentlemen in 1979 were saying the same thing. One was representing the scientific mind, and one was representing the spiritual mind. And I just found that so wonderfully fascinating. And by the way, Joel has a wisdom. I think it's 133. Yes. And in it he says, if it takes place in time and space, do not accept it as its appearance value, but search deeper in the realm of soul. See, in the realm of soul, you step outside of time. All right, now, I was having such a good time with this. Like I said, I got 9 sources to quote, and I've only quoted 3, I think. But Let's jump back into the healing seminars, Kauai 1989 and Chicago 1990. All right, so tape number two is called Breaking the Illusion of Power, or you could say the illusion of time. Every true spiritual healer knows that he has no personal power, yes. His only function is to learn how to be a pure channel for the grace of God. Now, that doesn't make you special. It doesn't make you better than someone else, smarter, more spiritually advanced. None of that is true. What happens is you come to the place where your awareness inside for a moment steps outside of time. You're in the eternal now, and like that I he had above the you, above the universe, you turn around and you observe. You just observe. You behold. You become that observer. And then your eye is awakened, your internal eye is awakened, and you see the universe, which is in the eternal now. And when you see that universe, there's nothing left but to rest in it. And then you know for sure, I didn't do this healing. I observed it happening. I bore witness to God in action. This divine substance is flowing freely as the uninterrupted consciousness of God and of the I am of every man. And this uninterrupted consciousness of the I am is the miracle worker that lifts the veil of illusion. Now let's look at Joel's chapter, The True Sense of the Universe. We'll look at just a piece of it. He says, your body, and you could go ahead and put in the universe too if you want, seen through the universal material beliefs, was born, matures, ages, and dies. You see, it's passing through time when you see it through material beliefs, mortal concepts. This same body, when correctly known, that is spiritually discerned, is the very appearing of soul substance, spirit substance, eternal being. So we need to step out of the mind that sees passing time and into the consciousness of the observer, looking back or looking out or looking in as a beholder. Now, he says, I want you all to understand the great secret of the universe. Had the ancients known it, our modern living would be in a paradise. The few who have known this secret in past ages could not teach it. No, and I'll tell you right now, you cannot teach the eternal now. That is something you can only observe. And it would appear that only a very few had the spiritual capacity to grasp its meaning. Some few understood it intellectually, but rarely was it understood in its spiritual significance. And here's that secret. The life which you behold in man, tree, or animal is not the life which is God. Human, animal, or plant life is not a manifestation of God, and therefore is not immortal, eternal, or spiritual. The life of material man or flower is mortal sense, objectified, It is a false sense of the life which is real. So, Mr. Wheeler said that the original creation, which happened 16.2 million years ago, I think that's the number, had no time. It was an eternal now. And Mr. Goldsmith says that the life which you observe with your eyes, through looking through the veil of material sense, is a false sense about that real life that was created or expressed. And so it's not that we have something to heal, it's that we have to get out of that mind that sees time as ticking away. We have to know, like Einstein and Wheeler, it's a stubbornly persistent illusion. Now, he says, do not take lightly what I am saying. This is the great revelation. It will reveal to you the secret of John, who beheld the universe not made by hands, but which is eternal, as consciousness appearing, spirit unfolding, and revealing itself. See how all this ties so beautifully together? All right, so for now, let's continue here. We're only on page one. You can see why I was up at 4 a.m. All right, so quickly, Herb says, the spiritual leader learns that his only hope for bringing order to this chaos is to contact the miracle worker, the I Am, in the kingdom of God within himself. Now, this is so different from anything else that it's, number one, you can't get a grip on it and control it. Number two, it has nothing to do with what you deserve or what the patient deserves. Number three, it has nothing to do with saying the right words or thinking the right thoughts. None of that applies. When you learn how to turn off your senses, enter the silence of your inner chamber, and there rest until you feel that inner movement of soul, of spirit, of Christ, then you will learn that that Christ opens your eyes. It lifts the veil so that the person you're seeing with a condition dissolves. And when the veil is lifted, you see reality. You see life as it is. You see the first chapter of Genesis. You see God. You see man made in God's image and likeness. And Herb says, the spiritual healer must overcome the illusion of a personal identity. Now, I think it was Joel that said, when we sit down to meditate, first we eliminate the patient or the student or the claim. Then we eliminate the practitioner, or a personal sense of us. And I wrote here in the margin, you must know you are not a person. Christ sees human life and human death as the same dream. Christ has no personal identity. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. This must be the only self that you have. Christ knows no man after the flesh. Christ sees God appearing as individual man. The spiritual healer lives and knows the truth that God is the one and the only inhabitant of a spiritual universe. Have you accepted the spiritual reality of mankind? If not, it's time we do, and I think right now is that time. In our meditation, let us accept one infinite Father, and let us see something you may never have thought of, something that is going to prove vital in your healing work. Because there is one infinite Spirit, he says, listen carefully. You will never receive more than one patient. Oh, each patient will come to you with a new face or a new claim, but don't be fooled. There are not many separate patients. It is always the one Spirit appearing to you. The spiritual healer has one patient, and he knows it. That one patient, again and again and again and again. Did you know that secret? He asks. Our human view of the entire world is illusion. Yes, because it's taking place in time, and time itself is an illusion. Mr. Wheeler, Mr. Bohr, Mr. Goldsmith, Mr. Fitch, all of them proved. And Mr. Jesus, I don't know his last name. Yeshua something. We'll go with Christ. They all proved that time is an illusion. And he said it. He freaked the people out at the time, but he said, before Abraham was, I am. He didn't say before Abraham was, I was. He said, right now I'm standing before Abraham was, and even after the end of the earth I'm standing. The illusion of space is a very important consideration, and it can take you out of many a problem. In spiritual healing, the concept of space is entirely false. We just read that, didn't we? If it takes place in time and space, it's an appearance, and you need to go deeper. This all ties together. And we've said it before, but maybe we didn't realize it at this depth. You know, they set up an experiment. I didn't read you about that one, but they did. And in the experiment, they found, by pointing a telescope out into the far reaches of space, the photons that erupted in that first Big Bang are still arriving at Earth. And guess what? When they didn't observe them, they went to the right and to the left equally. When one of them looked and observed and measured, they changed course. And so Wheeler discovered he could look back at the past and change the present. That's a small scale when you're talking about photons and positrons and neurons and all that. But why can't you scale it up? You can. So looking back at the past, you change the present. Now, if that's not an illusion, I don't know what is. But there's another place, and Wheeler discovered that too, standing in the eternal now. And that's where we're going in consciousness. And then we exist before the 16.2 billion years. And we exist after the end of time, and time shall be no more. How can there be space between oneself? If oneself is the truth, the space is the illusion. But spiritual discernment does not look at space. Spiritual discernment convinces you in your heart and soul and consciousness that God is one. And that's the experience I had in 1979 while listening to Herb's class, Healing Outside of Time. Because when I became aware of feeling a oneness with all that is, there was only one in that oneness. The body of Christ, the one infinite, perfect, invisible Spirit. In the silence, let us go now to the infinite kingdom of God within and rest there. Know this truth, the infinite I, Father, Son, within you, can never live in anyone finite or anything finite, so it can't live in time. In this realization, you are blessing the world. As you step out of the changing material dream of separate forms, your soul rises above the conflicts and visions of all human thought. This is spiritual healing, Christ healing, and it will lift you into a new dimension. Yes, the fourth dimension of existence. Thank you, Father, says Herb. You are living the infinite way. That means you are accepting the spiritual identity of the universe and all its inhabitants. Spirit is neither healthy nor unhealthy, rich nor poor, Greek nor Jew, male nor female. Spirit never changes identity. Spirit is always spirit. The spiritual healer acknowledges only the spiritual identity of everyone. The function of the spiritual healer is to be an impartial instrument for the revelation of God's harmony, God's perfect spiritual creation. That's the creation that they were observing before the entrance of time. They didn't know where to put time, the scientists, the physicists, the quantum mechanics, because being a universe, there's only one, and they knew that. But if they put time outside of the universe, then it froze the universe into an eternal now. Now, they didn't know quite what they were looking at, but they were looking at the same thing Herb and you and I are looking at, that time is an illusion. And we do stand in the eternal now, but we can feel it, and it can move through us only as we step out of this material sense of time. The spirit of which we speak is a dedicated infinite way student now appearing on earth as you. This consciousness calls no man father upon the earth. The one divine source is his Father, which art in heaven. The consciousness says, I and the eternal infinite Father are one, one spirit, unseparated throughout eternity. And it is speaking of your identity now. Every problem in our recreated world of images is composed of the synthetic substance which Christ pinpointed in one revealing sentence, take no thought for your life. Now, I don't know about you, but that's one of the very first things I learned in school, was to think, take thought. And I was rewarded. In sixth grade, I knew I completed a mathematical problem that my teacher could not complete. He got stuck. But then he said, if anybody completes this equation, I will let them listen to music with headphones for the next two math tests. Well, I couldn't not accept that challenge, so I went to work. And I finished it. And I raised my hand. I said, "I've finished the equation." He said, "Show me." And he pointed to the blackboard. So I went up there with my paper in hand and grabbed a piece of chalk and showed him the answer to the equation. Oh, he bent over and grabbed his legs and laughed and laughed, and I got to listen to music for the next two math tests. So I was rewarded for thinking. But then I made the mistake everyone else has made on Earth. I allowed that thinking to create my universe. And perhaps I look back and some of that affected the present. I don't know. But I know that it was a recreated universe, like he just called it. It was not the original universe made in the image and likeness of God. It was not the eternal now. And I was taught to be afraid. What if Mr. Khrushchev launches those missiles from Cuba? What if John F. Kennedy, who surrounded them with the Navy, what if they get into a war? We are going to be dissolved in an atomic blast, several of them. And we used to... Stupidest thing in the world I've ever seen, now looking back. We used to have air raid drills, and we'd all get under our desks like that's supposed to do anything. the whole city will be vaporized, but we'll be under our desks. Oh, boy. So I was taught to fear. And then I was taught that you can't trust the authorities. Because somebody took a rifle and shot John F. Kennedy in his convertible, and that was the end of him. And then you had the feeling that the authorities were lying about who did it. And they were. So I found out that I couldn't trust the authorities. I couldn't trust the world. Couldn't even trust myself. We are dealing with human thought, which is a counterfeit of divine thought. And it is these projected shadows of human thought without divine substance that present counterfeit persons, places, and things to fill our make-believe world, our make-believe universe. Mr. Wheeler did not know that he was looking at illusion. He suspected it because he quoted Einstein, who said it was a stubbornly resistant illusion. And he suspected that you could bend it with a wormhole, or you could bring time to a complete stop in a black hole. So he suspected he was looking at an illusion. And only briefly did he suspect that there was a real universe, and that without time it rests in an eternal now. In no thought we rest with the confidence that our Father knoweth our needs, and is filling every need with the divine grace. In no thought you break the world of illusion and of time. So, he says at the end of talk number one, let's have a short rest and see then what the Father has prepared for us. Now we're at 55 minutes, so I'm not going to continue. We're going to stop there. We'll do the second half next week. but I wanted to look at something else, which is one of my favorites. In this parenthesis, eternity. In this chapter, reality and illusion, he says, because of an illusory sense of the universe, however, the mortal scene appears in as mortality, with all its errors and with time. Whereas it is in reality a divine universe. This world is God's world. It is the temple of the living God. So we're looking at the eternal now. But when we see it with finite eyes and ears, what we see and hear is but the illusory picture of the reality that is there. And so, looking back over 16.2 trillion years to the Big Bang, we're looking with the veil called time, and it's distorted. And what we observe creates our now. Some good, some bad. Always changing, changing, changing. But, he says here, the illusion is in the mind that it's falsely seeing the world. The illusion is never, ever out in the world. And so we're looking at the eternal now, and we bring along the illusion of time, even knowing it's an illusion. And it dominates us. It rules us. We can't get outside of it. Well, science has proved you can. You can get outside of it in a wormhole, a black hole, or traveling the speed of light. And Joel has proved you can get outside of it. And Herb has proved you can get outside of it by standing in the eternal now and letting that inner spirit lift the veil so that you can see the universe of God's creation, or the first chapter of Genesis. The illusion is in the mind that is falsely seeing the world. The illusion is never out in the world. An illusion cannot be externalized. An illusion is a deceptive state of thought. And it can take place only within a person's mind, not outside it. With our human eyesight, we see a world constantly changing, made up of young, middle-aged, and old people, sick and well, poor and rich, unhappy and happy. All this is an illusory picture in the human mind. But because there is only one human mind, now catch that, because there is only one human mind, it is an illusory picture in your mind and my mind. Such a world has no externalized existence. All right, so, Mr. Wheeler, the world that you looked back at and created an effect on the present, that was the world of illusion. And it was taking place only in your mind, which is why when you observed it with your mind, it changed course. But now, here is Christ standing before you. And I suspect that Mr. Wheeler knows this now. And it is saying to you, before the Big Bang, I am. and even after the end of the world I am, and time shall be no more. Okay, so I'm going to stop there. We are right at an hour. I'm sorry I had to read so much, but there was no other way to bring to your attention Mr. Wheeler. And by the way, he lived till he was 96, so the doctors had given him 6 more years, and he lived 20 more years. But it was only at the end that he began to say and to ask the question, why existence? It's in his journal, why existence? By now he knew about illusion, I'm pretty sure, because otherwise you couldn't bend it. And by now he knew about the eternal now, because he saw that too. So he must have become suspicious and began asking, why existence? And I suspect he's got the answer to that by now. So he may be showing up again, giving some more classes. All right. I'm not sure why Spirit took us down that road, but I'm glad, because it feels so right. And it just, when I read it from the scientific view or the spiritual view, it just vibrates in my being. I can feel it. All right. Thank you for drawing this out. We'll finish this talk next week, the second half of the second chapter. God bless, and you yourself are timeless, eternal, everlasting.